Right, morning, Greg. Can you please ask your listeners, are any other parents getting letters from schools requesting money to pay for various items? Example, €35 to cover the cost of paper and photocopying. Why are schools demanding these fees from parents at a time when we have a cost of living crisis? Are schools not funded by the Department of Education? It seems they're not funded as they might be. I'm getting the same every Friday. And it's called, it mustn't be voluntary, because I keep getting a message saying that I have a levy to pay, €120. A levy? So that's not a voluntary contribution, is it? It's a levy that I'm getting the messages for. So nothing surprises me at this point. Hopefully I'll pay it this month anyway, but you know yourself, it's not insignificant in terms of the amount. Back to that submarine story, remember the Cusk, Greg, which I don't, to be honest with you. They were banging as well at least every half hour. It's coordinated, so hopefully they'll be recovered alive in time. It's still like searching for a needle in a haystack of needles, because the amount of water and the depth of it is so significant, but fingers crossed. House insurance. Hi, Greg. Cheapest house insurance we could get was €1,000. They said all insurance has gone up €125. We paid €695 on last year's price. That seems way more than €125. Yeah, indeed it is. So you did the shop around. The cheapest you could get was €1,000. That was an interesting conversation we had yesterday. So if any of you have been shopping around for insurance and you can tell us that story, what it was this year, what your renewal was, what you would, what you got it for. It might be helpful to other listeners. If Brian, who we spoke to earlier about complaints against lawyers and barristers, says, if Brian wants to feel real dissatisfaction, he should meet with alienated parents, many who do not complain as they feel it's worthless. But it's never worthless. You have to use the mechanism. But I really understand. I think I understand your frustration. Patrick messaged in, I was in the traffic at the weekend and ended up sitting for over 40 minutes for three Garda motorbikes to move into the town. Not a single car moved in that time. It only added to the chaos of traffic. In that time, I watched two ambulances sit in the queue. All right, thank you very much for that. Hi, I was just wondering, how long is the driving waiting list for Letterkenny? I've been on the waiting list for 16 weeks and still no invitation. I did try Ring, but just an automated service where it says they cannot give dates over the phone. They can't, but if you've access to the internet, if you go on to, if you Google driving test estimator, the RSA has an estimator on it. Now, I'll talk about that in a moment, but maybe you have used it. But if you go on to the, if you Google driving test estimator, you scroll down, and if it's cars, you click into category B. If you put in your driver number, which is on your provisional license, and your date of birth, it will estimate when you will be invited for an invite. So that will give you some idea. 16 weeks, it sounds like you should be due it soon. That being said, my own son is waiting on his, and he's been waiting as long as that, 16 weeks. The estimator says he will get an invite mid-July. Now, then it went back to late July, then it went to early July, and then it went to mid-July again. And from talking to other people who've been waiting, they say that normally you get the invite a week or two before the estimator says. Do you get me? So if you want some idea, Google driving test estimator, put in your driver number, your date of birth, and you will get an estimation as to when you can expect to be invited. And then after that, it's 2 or 3 weeks before you actually sit the test. I'm on long-term medication, says this listener, and I noticed in the small print for the past few months I've been getting a generic version of the medication. Obviously the pharmacy has been doing this already. I don't mind, as I trust the pharmacist, but should I be getting exactly what I'm prescribed at the moment until they make this change? I'm just a bit confused. Well, when the patent runs out in medicine, my understanding is that all of the medicine, whether it's the original branded stuff or the generic versions, are all the exact same. Now, again, open to correction on this, but that's what I was told by a pharmacist. So the generic is the exact same, what I was told, as the one that maybe originally held the original patent. Ashling, if you Ashling, Caroline, if you want to put through the next caller, because I don't have that outbreak earlier. Keep your data on your own server. This data center's a good PR is nonsense. They're using 15% of our electricity, swimming off. Too much government propaganda today. It's not propaganda. You have a different opinion, but I get you. Okay, I get you. Let me see. It appears that the HSE has learned no lessons from Lee Cross in Donegal. Once again, we have a young person who was vulnerable and placed in a nursing home which was totally unsuitable to her needs. HICWA was set up to stop these instances happening, but again, a system's failure has had devastating consequences for a young girl and her family. Is anyone in the HSE going to take responsibility for these cases? Yeah, you would hope so. Right, okay. More about the emigration conversation. Carmel joins us. Hiya, Carmel.
Hello. Hi.
Good to have you on the show. Thanks very much for getting involved in the conversation. Right, we're talking a little bit about emigration. You emigrated in the late 90s, didn't you? Was that by choice? You wanted to see the world, Carmel, or did you feel you had to, or what was the thought process at the time?
Well, I had a good job at the time. It's just that I wanted to travel and see a bit of the world, and I always liked the thought of Australia more so than America. Mm. But I was so glad that I did, because it was a great experience. It was very good. Became very independent, because you had to. There was no one making up and self. I would advise any young person nowadays to go travel, because it is a brilliant experience and become very independent. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I was in tears leaving Dublin, and I was in tears leaving Sydney.
Wow, okay. And do you mind me asking, because it's some time ago, I don't think it's private, what did you work at the first time you went over, Carmel?
I advise anyone going over now, the first thing you need to do, well, after you get some kind of accommodation, would be set up your bank account and get your similar to our PPS number, like your tax number. That would be the two most important things to do for anybody travelling, first of all. But I had worked doing a lot of kind of either accounts administration. When you went over, you need to have your CV already and just go around all the, you know, the agencies and leave in your CV. And I just went... Mostly, actually, I got one agency that got me all my work. I worked for Pull Out Australia for a couple of weeks.
Wow.
I worked, Procter & Gamble. And then I went, the majority of my work, I was working for a company, they put up mobile phone masks, and we had to make up the booklet. So you just had to go around to certain people to get certificates and then make up the booklets for all the different masks. Mm. But I loved it. It was a great way to meet. Do you know, it was the first time, actually, I was on a train when I went to...
Leaving Donegal, that doesn't surprise me.
Leaving, yeah, no, that's it. Because you have to know and say, all right, what station I'm at, or do I have to... I always say, make sure if you doze off, make sure you wake up at the station before you're going to get off.
Yeah,
to make sure you need to get off, I need to get off this train station and go and make your way to the next platform to get your next train to get there. But,
and what was the balance of life like, Carmel? Is it a nice place to live, the work-life balance, the social life maybe? Or?
Oh, yeah, well, that's what I would... It's a good selling point for Australia. The way I look at it, there is jobs in Ireland if you want to work. And it's the same like in Australia. But the weather, of course, which we've all enjoyed, is a big point. But you've got these all beautiful beaches. And like Australia... There's the Hunter Valley wineries, which I remember doing a lovely wee tour of when I was out there.
Mm.
And then you have, like, for me, I would say my highlight for Australia would probably be doing a tandem skydive, 14,000 feet. When I was there, you're not allowed to
do that at Donegal Airport, you know.
Different views.
I know.
But like the things, like, you know, I was on top of Uluru or Ayers Rock back then. You can't do that now. I've climbed Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Wow. Are you really?
You know,
I've
been to I covered half of Australia. I was at the Melbourne Grand Prix. I took a trip of 2 weeks one tour over to New Zealand.
Mm.
And it was my first time up in a helicopter and walking on the Franz Josef Glacier.
Wow.
You know, there's so much, it's so easy. Like you can go to, a lot of Australians go to Bali on their holidays. You're near to Thailand, you're near to Singapore. You're so much closer when you're right there to go to different countries.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have been back in 2012 and I've been back just in February of this year, and things have become more expensive. So I can give you an example of how things have become expensive.
Yeah.
I lived with an Australian girl when I was out there in 2000, and I caught up with her when I was there, in February, and she told me there was a group of Irish nurses. They are living now in a place called Ranwick, which is further inland. A lot of the Irish back in 2000 would have been in Bondi Beach. And now, as they call them, as a lot of the English, the Australian calls them the Palms, are living there. And the Irish have to go further north. And they were paying, I think, €5,000 in rent. And that's between four or five of them, because the rents have got up quite high, because the cities are expensive. So if anybody's going out there and thinking, oh, this is going to be great, you know, you have to prepare to be able to work or have money coming out with you, because rents are dear. And when you go out there, like for Bondi, you're buying an empty apartment. You have to buy your furniture. It's usually when people are traveling, they're selling their furniture, and then people coming in buy that furniture. Mm. So people need to be kind of aware of that, unless you have people that are already out there and you can go and be with them.
So there is a change over the last couple of decades then, Carmel, that it maybe it's not quite it's not quite the experience it might have been for your generation originally.
Yeah, well, like the good part about it is when I'm out there, you can party till about 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm. So compared to when I came home, I thought, oh, it's over two. That just should be another 4 hours to party. Yeah, like so, you know, that kind of way. But it is brilliant. But you know, you do have to work. But there is great fun side. You meet a lot of different Irish, like the Irish all there are all a certain Irish bars and stuff like that there. So you'll either see a lot of you know, the county jerseys from all the different counties in Ireland.
Do the Australians think of so many Irish and English going over there? You know, I mean, obviously there must be are people being displaced from Australians being displaced from their jobs, or is there just an abundance of employment there? I mean, what do you believe in your experience, Carmel, is Australians' attitudes to the likes of the English and Irish going over there to live and work?
Well, I worked with a good few Australians in my different job back then, but they never had any problem with them. I remember one of the jobs after I came back doing a stint of travelling, and I was going back into the same company I was in beforehand, and I had to answer the phones, and once they heard their Irish, oh, you're from Ireland, what part are you from, and all that's here, started having a conversation with me before they were dealing with whatever they were ringing the company for in the first place. So but there's so many different nationalities, you know, in Australia from, you know, all over the world. So I don't know if they have any problem with.
Like there is.
They hadn't in my time.
There's a high level of homelessness in Australia, 123,000 people homeless there at the moment. Is there any, do you ever get any sense or of a conversation that, you know, maybe the accommodation being used by, you know, people visiting or working over there is displacing those people? Do you know the same kind of conversations you might hear here at times?
Here? I never really had any of that conversation. Most of the people that I probably would have seen were mostly Irish people. There was that one girl, like she is as a born Australian, so but she would never really have said no anything, I suppose. Anywhere, I think, you know, if you want to work, the work is there. It's just up to you to whether you take that work. And the other thing I did notice back then, people who wouldn't work in certain jobs in Ireland were working them kind of jobs in Australia, because that's the only kind of work they could get.
Yeah. Okay. I get you. I understand. So Carmel, do you think you could go out to Australia now? Say I was 19, 20. Can you go out there and make a life for yourself? Do you think, can you accumulate money? Could you get on the property ladder, or could you work there for a couple of years, do you think, and land back here with a deposit for your house? Do you know what I mean? I'm kind of sort of trying to get to the motivation as to why someone might leave more long term rather than go for that brilliant life experience you had.
We were saying that some of the people are out there. Yeah, you need to get the good job, but you're still going to be working the same way as you are here. And it takes things are going up in Australia as well. Suppose if you got the right job, you probably could. But I know, like a lot of people went to Perth and they went to the mining, And there were plenty of money in that way. You know,
it's
you work, say,
work
3 weeks and then you're off.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah.
It's hard work.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So you have to do the hard work. Otherwise, if you're in any of the cities, it's going to be expensive. So
right. Listen, you cried leaving Dublin. You cried leaving Australia. You've seen both sides of it now. And you've seen it over a couple of decades with your return visits. Parking the brilliant life experience, becoming more independent, you know, and growing as an individual. Just generally life, where one might settle. Where would you, ideally, if I could click my fingers, like to be? That's the first question. Then I'll do a follow-up question dependent on your answer, Carmel.
I would easily live in Australia.
Okay.
And I have friends that have went out, say, like maybe 10 years ago, and they're still living out there. So, if I had a choice to say, right, which country would you like to live in? I probably, even though as much as I love Ireland, I love to live in Australia, I wouldn't mind.
Right, okay, I get you. All right, that's pretty balanced. I have no follow-up.
But the only thing is that probably would be family.
Of course,
and
yeah.
I'm a big Donegal supporter as well, so I'd miss my Donegal.
Yeah, that's it. But I suppose as time passes, you start following maybe a local team over there or something. Okay. Listen, Carmel, it's a really interesting insight. So the grass is greener on the other side, would you say? So, like, do you think our young people are heading off, if they're going over there for longer than a year, are they heading over for a better life? They are getting a better life, or?
Yeah, you can get it out there, but if you're, like, when you're going out, like, on, let's say, the two-year visa, like, a lot of people can get now, because if they can work their 3 months either fruit picking or farming, they can take up the second year of visa and stuff. I would say, definitely, I would advise any person to go to travel. It's a great experience. It's a great adventure. You'll probably get to do things over there that you won't get a chance to do here. You have to work hard for it, too. Like,
nothing comes easy in this life, does it? Doesn't matter what country
no.
you're in.
Carmel, doesn't matter what country you're in.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks so much for your insight. Great to chat to you, Carmel. And have you any plans to go back soon? Have you had a holiday planned or anything?
Well, I was back there in February, so
oh, you're
never
all
know
right,
again.
You're all right. I don't feel sorry for you. All right, Carmel, have a lovely day. Enjoy the rain. Okay,
all
take
right.
care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
A caller says, Greg, myself and my husband went to Australia and we did work hard and we sent all our money home and came home to build our home with the plan of being there 5 years and coming back here to live. We built our house in Donegal, which is now, wait for it, full of defective concrete. So our issue is, do we walk away and return to Australia or stay in this home that brings nothing but tears to us? If I was a life coach, I think, particularly given your set of circumstances. Greg, my daughter's currently in Australia. She had to do a lot of health and safety courses, which she had to pay for before she could begin work. Then she moved states and had to do them all over again. She isn't a good job, but she has admitted that with the cost of living and rent, she's digging into her savings to live and is not making any huge amounts of money. Right. So this is someone in a good job, trained up over there for it. But to live, digging into the savings. She has to be there for 2 years, but has decided that the quality of life in Ireland is better and will return home in December. More of those stories. I think it's really interesting because we talk around it, but we don't often talk about it. I think it's kind of an interesting conversation. I hope it's reflective of what you think out there is that you find it interesting. I thought Carmel's insight really was quite fascinating. Shall I read some of the comments that were put on the post that I put up yesterday just to get a sense of what social media think? Mary said, it's awful, like losing a generation in front of our eyes. It's brilliant experience for them, and who would honestly blame them when you hear about the working conditions and job flexibility, but a huge loss to this country. But we're hearing, Mary, a different side to it. Shirley said, just keep saying goodbye to friends, kids, which means my daughter and her boyfriend will be away soon. Rosemary, worse than now than it ever was in Ireland, but do we blame them? No. That's immigration. Yes, Greg, nobody talks about it. It's a silent mass departure. Another, my son spent 4 years in college getting his degree. Plenty of companies willing to employ him, but not willing to pay a decent wage, struggling even to pay the rent. He'll emigrate eventually, and I can't blame him. Helen said it's a good experience for them when they emigrate. Yes, people have to emigrate because no work here for them. I did this in the 80s. I don't regret it. Now that I'm back, nothing has changed here. Wish I'd never came back. I came back with a lot of nursing skills, and it's still who you know, not what you know. Awful country to live in. Is it any wonder people want to leave this country? Ireland does nothing for its own people and the cost of living is absolutely ridiculous. If I could, I'd be gone tomorrow. Roisin said it's very sad, but sure, what's here for them? That's what I'm talking about. Like, is there any element where we talk down this great country of ours? Obviously, we have to highlight inequalities, gaps, but do we overdo it, do you think? Is it any way possible that maybe we, as the older generations, are sort of talking down the country to the point where we're semi-influencing them? Maybe that's what we want to. I don't know. As I say, brand new conversation. I'm not sure what to think. Very interested in what everybody else out there thinks. Right, okay. Did you know? You know the Nintendo, don't you? Well, there's a collective, Nintendo Donegal, and they're taking part. There's a tournament coming up in Buncrana next month. Really interesting we won this. Stay where you are. We're going to be talking to Helen shortly. All right, you're very welcome back to the program, right? Are any of you out there gamers? Did you ever game? We're talking about the Nintendo. Now, I had the first Nintendo handheld. Never really got on with it. Didn't like the games. I kind of went down the Sega and then the Sony route. But Helen Doherty, not so much. She loves the Nintendo, I hope. Anyway, Helen Doherty, member of Nintendo Donegal. Good morning.
Hey, Martin White, Donegal Dini.
How are you getting on?
Oh, I must say, I'm a massive Sega fan girl too.
Right, okay.
There's actually loads of great Sega games on the Switch.
I was at the Sega Master System, then the Sega Mega Drive, and we couldn't afford
Love
the Sega
both.
Dreamcast, was it not Dream something?
Oh, yeah. I had
first...
a Dreamcast, but...
Did you? That was the one with the
disc. We couldn't
disc.
Get the Saturn.
I really wanted the Saturn.
Yeah,
me too. But anyway, after that, I progressed, actually started with an Oric computer.
An Oric.
It was called. And you had to, and my sister, in fairness to it, came with a book, right? And you actually had to program it. And you could make some version of Space Invaders. But if there was a power cut you typed one line of code wrong, it didn't work. And in fairness to my sister, God rest her, she typed for hours on end so we could play. But anyway, that was my kind of PlayStation type of person, never had an Xbox or whatever. So come here, talk to us about Nintendo Donegal.
Okay, so Nintendo Donegal is a group for, it was originally like for 3DS players, now it's more for Switch players. It was founded in 2015 or 16, can't remember. I came on in 2016. I'm pretty sure it was you who I was on with, actually.
Right.
Just chatting about an event we were doing back then, which was our first ever event. So we're still going now in 2023, partly in thanks to a gentleman called Terry, because I had to step down at some point. He carried the baton from then. But then during pandemic, I kind of came back, and he stepped down because of he's got lots of commitments. Nintendo Donegal are doing an event in July for Nintendo Switch owners, and we're going to be having a Mario Kart 8 tournament, and there's going to be like a huge trophy to win, and there's going to be a raffle as well. And both things are free to enter. You will need a controller to take part in the Mario Kart 8 tournament. And those under the age of 16 need to be accompanied by a responsible adult. But if that sounds good, then yeah, please come on down. Like I say, it's in the exchange in Buncrana, 8th of July, 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. It should be really good. And
let me ask you, how many do you think might turn up? Because, I mean, obviously the Nintendo Switch is hugely popular and, you know, Mario Kart's one of the flagship games. I mean, do you have any idea how many people might actually turn up if the stars align, I wonder?
Well, it's always like a Pandora's box. You never really know. At the moment, I think there's like 13 or 15 people RSVP'd on the event page. I know the room, I think it can hold like 40 people, so we'll be all right for space. Just getting the word out. So anyone who's interested is, you know, more than welcome to come along. On the day itself, I'm not going to have any expectations because sometimes it's best not to. And gosh, you know, there could be, you know,
hopefully it's
up to like 30 or so. You never know.
It's something really, really different. So, what are the prizes then? As you say, it's free to enter. I mean, listen, coming out on top, I think that's the actual best prize if you were able to say you were the champion. Let's just call it
bragging
as it
right.
is. Exactly. but what is there any other incentives?
Well, yeah, the top prize for the Mario Kart 8 tournament is this huge trophy. It's a Mario Kart. It's one of the trophies that you can get in the game, but obviously it's a physical version. I don't think we'll be having a second prize for that, but like for the raffle, we'll be having lots of like little plushies, which can be won, and possibly like maybe some chocolates and stuff like that.
All right, okay. So get on to the Nintendo Donegal Facebook page. I think you'll have people of all ages taking part. It's going to be great fun. It's in the Exchange Castle Avenue in Boncrana, and it is on July 8th, and it runs between. What times did you say there? I have them here in front of me. I don't. 2 to 4 p.m. There's a raffle also on the day.
2 to 4, sorry, sorry. Yeah.
No,
it was 2 to 4. Sorry, I made a mistake earlier.
Did you?
I said 2 till 6. So I'm really sorry to everyone, but Craig's right, it's 2 till 4.
You're all right, Helen. Come here. No one's dead. You're all right. It's okay. 2 to 4.
I don't want anyone turning up at 4 and then, like, you know.
Oh, yeah,
like,
actually.
Obviously,
fairness,
I made a mistake.
Okay. So it's 2 to 4.
So thank you for correcting me
then. And you need a Switch controller with you.
Yes, ideally bring your Switch as well, because there'll be other people like to play like Switch games, like
in,
you know, when you aren't taking part.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you play anything else except the Nintendo Switch?
I used to play Steam games on my PC.
Right.
Do you have Steam?
I know a PlayStation. I told you, I'm incredibly I'm incredibly brand loyal, Helen. I'm incredibly.
Are you PlayStation 5?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I am.
Ah, nice.
3, 4, 5. started with the small one. What was the first? The PlayStation. Then no, I think this is the fourth incarnation of it. Yep, I went from Sega to PlayStation, and that's it. It's just brilliant.
Yeah.
Still to this day, if I want to switch off, not in the summer, but certainly in the winter, I'll bang on Call of Duty or something and just chill out.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. I could beat you at FIFA, Helen. No problem at all.
Yeah, you could. No, honestly, I do like playing FIFA, but I'm also
UFC. I could kick your ass. If I'm allowed to say that. Can I say ass?
US what?
UFC. It's a fight game. I am.
UFC.
Yeah. Okay. It's a fighting game.
I don't even know that, so I'm sure
well, anyway, that's Mario Kart. All right. Well, I'll have a go at Mario Kart. Listen, Helen, lovely to chat to you. Great to see you back involved.
Thank you.
I pick you up
Thanks
correctly with
you.
Nintendo Donegal, and we'll chat again in the future. Best luck with that event. Yep. People are going to have a lot of fun of all ages, I would imagine, and it's going to be a few rage quitters maybe even. Okay. Thanks, Helen.
Right, take care. Bye.
Yeah, right. If you're interested in that, go to Nintendo Donegal. It's on Facebook. And you can register your interest to take part in that Mario Kart 8 competition. And it is in the Exchange Castle Avenue in Boncrana. It runs from 2 to 4 p.m. Something different on Sunday if you've got young people listening with you, because they might be off school now. And listen, it's specialist, it's niche. But if we give them a wee leg up, then it's all the worthwhile for me. Greg, it's obvious what the insurance companies are doing. They came under scrutiny for the charges of car insurance, which they reduced after they were warned. So now they're going to put it in on house insurance to recoup their money. I think we'd all accept that if building costs have increased, insurance is going to have to increase. But not it's some of the messages we're getting from listeners. It's the increases are doubling, more in fact, in some cases. I've been with the same insurance company for years. Last year, it was 430. This year, it was 801. And according to them, that was with a discount of €764 for being a loyal customer. So I shopped around and I got the exact same insurance as my original one for, wait for it, 430 last year. They bumped it up to 801, said they'd knocked off 764 for them being a loyal customer. This listener shopped around. What are they paying this year? €30 less than last year. They've got it for €400. So they've saved €30, and it's a two-finger salute for the gougers. Many of these secondary schools are semi-private, and therefore they can apply a levy, kind of like school fees. Some schools refer to it as a voluntary contribution. That's for different schools, and it is voluntary. So the levy is, are we saying then the levy is obligatory? Okay. Now, these are schools that are part of the ETB, so there's mandatory parental payments to certain schools. I didn't know that, if that's the case. Does anyone believe that desperate people trapped in a submarine are calmly waiting to tap on the sides every 30 minutes? I reckon they're battering the living daylights out of the sub. But that would be pointless, you see, because there would be certain things that would be appropriate to do. Firstly, they have limited oxygen. So and it's not even the limited oxygen, it's the carbon dioxide that they themselves are expelling. So if they were banging like you suggest here, that would be really counterintuitive. And there are at least one expert down there. There's another person that went down the Titanic in 87, I believe. So they would know that panicking is not going to save them. If they bang all of the time, that noise could be presumably confused with just regular background noise. So the intermittent tapping would make sense. All right, we're going to get further reaction now to the news that the ATU is to hopefully have a veterinary school. Dr. Jared Rorty spoke to us about this in the past. He's going to chat to us again in just 2 minutes. So as we were talking about earlier, the government has cleared the way for 3 new vet schools as part of a package that promises up to 1,300 extra college places a year in healthcare and veterinary. The University of Limerick, Atlantic Technological University and South East Technology University have been approved to open vet schools, which will treble the intake of student vets nationally. This has been a call from Dr. Jared Rorty, who I presume, Jared, I presume you very much welcome this news. And we heard from the head of the ATU earlier on that they would hope with the everything happening as it should to be able to be taking in students in September, late 2025.
This is fantastic news, absolutely fantastic news. I mean, us in the Veterinary Working Group have been working and lobbying for the last 10 years to try and achieve a situation where you don't have kids going out to Eastern Europe to try and study veterinary. Never in our wildest dreams could we have anticipated that we would get what we were looking for, which was the capacity to produce our own vets. So nationally and as a vet, I totally welcome it. But as a Donegal man, this is absolutely incredible. I listened to Dr. Orla Flynn earlier. She was brilliant and she was really, really good. But, you know, the average punter doesn't actually realise this is like Donegal winning the All-Ireland. We have moved from being sort of like Finn Harps playing in the League of Ireland to now having a university that's a Champions League, because a veterinary faculty is probably the hardest faculty to run and to deliver for any university. So such a vote of confidence to realise now that on our own doorstep we're going to have a veterinary faculty. The next step now is we need our dental faculty, a medical faculty. We need to stand back and look, and as Dr. Orla Flynn pointed out, we suffer economically without the university. We suffer because Derry didn't get the university in the 60s, and that's the reason the median income in Donegal is only half of that of Dunleary Rathdown. That's the reason that the income west of the Banner in Northern Ireland is a total disaster, because Derry doesn't have a university, and unfortunately the politics in there, they're not going to get the places. And the sad thing is with healthcare, when healthcare sciences moved from Coleraine to Derry, what happened? Stormont actually halved the amount of training places. So for the average person out there that don't actually realise what this means, and this is what I've got to get across, this is actually the day now when Donegal Atlantic Technological University takes its place with the Bristols, the Edinburghs, the Cambridges, or the Oxfords. It's an incredible thing for Donegal.
Wow. Okay. And I'm trying to reflect on our last conversation, Dr. Rorty, and I seem to remember frustration, a lack of common sense. Is that a correct characterization of how you were feeling? And is this why there is such relief and welcome of this announcement today?
We are absolutely over the moon. And listen, I have zero political ties one way or the other. But the reality is the Minister for Agriculture delivered this. He delivered it nationally. He delivered it locally. He listened to us. He listened to the farming bodies. He went into Cabinet. He fought. And he fought particularly for Donegal. It was fascinating because I talked to the guys in Limerick and the guys in Waterford. And they said, your man in Donegal says that if Letterkenny doesn't get a vet school, nobody's getting a vet school. And I mean, it's absolutely fantastic because geographically now it totally makes sense. Waterford has one, Dublin has one, Letterkenny has one. And the reality is the future for education and third level education for the whole North and Northwest is going to be based out of Letterkenny to compensate, as I said, for the inadequacy that we have in Northern Ireland. So, I mean, we reflect back on the late Donoghue Malley and the late Neil T. Blaney that bought the regional college originally to Letterkenny and the vision that they have. And as I said, we followed up with the Minister for Agriculture now delivering this absolutely platinum gold star course to come to the town.
All right, I'll put the same question to you as I did, Dr. Flynn. Do you think we'll see less people now feel they have to go to the likes of Poland to continue their studies? And do you think we'll see more people going, right, okay, this is a career option for me now that I can do it here in this locality or that locality?
Of course we will, because that's the reason we in the lobbying group have been lobbying for 10 years, is to stop kids having to go out to Eastern Europe. But more importantly, and this is really important for Donegal, I mean, the costs of going down to Dublin to train in UCD Vet School is phenomenal. Thank God costs in Donegal are an awful lot less. So we're going to be producing an awful lot more vets locally. But the knock-on effect, and I think this has to be emphasised, is the world's the oyster now for ATU. I definitely think the next thing we need to look at is a medical faculty and a dental faculty. I mean, something I haven't said on the show before, but I've been saying it over and over again, is the World Health Organization says it is immoral and unethical to do what we do in Letterkenny General Hospital. So just run that, I'll run that past you again. World Health Organization says it's immoral and unethical to be poaching doctors that are foreign trained from their countries that need them. Yep. So we're sitting in the Western developed world. We are only after Israel as a country that steals doctors from developing countries. We're sitting at taking in 40%. Pakistan needs 200,000 doctors. They're fantastic doctors. It's great that they would come to train here and go back to their own countries, but that's not the model Ireland's working on.
It's funny you should bring that up, we're working on. I have put that, I can't remember exactly who I put it to, but it was someone certainly either high up in medicine or politics, and I did say, should we not feel guilty for poaching doctors from these countries? And I think it was particularly African countries I used it in that analogy or that question, sorry. And they stated, no, they've a surplus and we shouldn't feel bad about
that. No, they most certainly don't have a surplus. All you've got to do is go to Dr. Google and he'll tell you straight away the massive shortage in Zimbabwe, Zambia, Pakistan, India, the whole way through the developing world. Because what happens is countries like Ireland, 42% of our doctors at the moment are foreign trained. Now, I'm not for the moment criticising the quality and the calibre. They're incredible doctors. I think we should continue to bring them over here to train them and to send them back. But our model at the moment, now that we've got the veterinary thing solved, and thank God I think we have the dental problem solved as well, or welcome the new dental school going into the Royal College in Dublin, because we have a massive shortage of dentists as well. And you know, now thank God we're sheltered from that in Donegal because we have access to Derry where there isn't a shortage of dentists. But I occasionally do a locum around Dublin where there's a 3-4-6 month waiting list in a lot of my colleagues' practices and they can't get in to see a dentist. So the new dental school is going to help solve that. But no, all you've got to do is, to say, go back to Dr. Google, put in WHO, put in unethical, immoral, and you've loads and loads of articles saying what we do, taking 42, dependent on 42% of our doctors from overseas. So where do we go now in Letterkenny? Letterkenny now needs to push on and let's do a dental faculty and a medical faculty for the Northwest and based out of Letterkenny.
Right, okay. Let me put it to you, Dr. Rorty. There are also, whilst our students are still in college, other countries trying to poach our newly qualified professionals. Do you think that there is any argument for some sort of a provision whereby people are almost obliged to work here for a year or two?
I totally agree. So there's a great analogy, for example, where I've worked in South Africa, a model there whereby you're committed to give a handful of years back. So I definitely think if you stand back and look at it, say for sake of argument, you train as a vet, train as a dentist, train as a doctor, you have been handed 300,000 to 400,000 by your economy in that training. So there's an argument that you have golden handcuffs, and what you say is those people have to give. NHS uses it in England, training physiotherapists, radiographers, that you've got to give 2 or 3 years back. But what is also shown is that 80% of people tend to stay in within a 20-mile radius of where they trained. So invariably, if we're training doctors, dentists, vets in Letterkenny, a very high proportion of them might decide to go abroad. And that's no bad thing. I traveled the world. I've worked in Australasia, North America, Africa. But the vast majority of people do eventually come home if they're from that area and if they're trained in that area. So, yeah, I agree with the golden handcuffs. It's a great proposal. The idea that, okay, if you're going to go and be handed $500,000 or $400,000 to train as a doctor, you'll get 3 or 4 years back in the area that you've actually qualified. But also, you've got to actually start training sufficient numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, as you say, a percentage will always hang about. Okay, Dr. Jared Rorty, what a welcome to it in educational terms, or even
fantastic.
Beyond that,
and
like winning the All-Ireland.
You know, it's, yeah, and as I say, people probably don't actually realise, I think, right, 40 places, what's the impact of 40 places in the economy in Donegal? It's not just that. It's the fact that it's a veterinary faculty. So, as I said, it shows that the people, the powers that be in education are saying to the ATU, we have such confidence in you that you can run the most difficult course that there is to run. So we're not looking at you as just a body that's going to train, for example, veterinary nurses, which is fantastic and it's great, and ATU do that very well. But what the Department of Education and further education are saying to ATU in this, we have such confidence in you that we acknowledge that you're capable of running any course under the sun. Mm. Now, in terms of the impact for the economy, not only do you then start to have produce students, but you've got research. You start to, and you know, the economy will grow on the back of this. And I go back to, you know, something that people don't realise. People complain about the A5 and say, you know, the A5 impacts on us. What people don't realise is the absence of a major university in Derry has had a serious detrimental economic impact on Donegal. And now, today, we've an announcement that ATU is acknowledged as having the potential to be a world leader in education. So the impact for Donegal on our economy is phenomenal.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, because what you're saying there, because what we are trying to do on this programme, more than perhaps others might, is trying to talk about how we get to a better place rather than always talking about where we are. And it's been brilliant to have your insight into that. Dr. Jared Rorty, I know you're incredibly busy, so we appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Brilliant. Talk soon.
All right, take care, Slán. Agus mar Jean Y. Okay, right. So you heard, that's big news. Now, if you're not interested in that stuff, you might not feel it. But obviously, Jared, given his skill sets, realises that it's big news. Greg, my son and his wife and 3 children left Donegal just before COVID. They are all in Australia. They love it. They came back after COVID and sold their home here and have no intention of coming back. I miss and love them, but I'd never hold them back. The plus for me is they often send me random tickets and tell me to fly over for 3 weeks at a time, and I think it makes our time together all the more special. That's lovely. That's lovely. And that's worked for yous. Right. I have a sister living in Canada. She's loving it out there. A very expensive place to live, but her salary covers it. In Ireland, she was waiting to have an operation for 3 years. When she went to Canada, she had it done in 3 weeks. Ireland is finished when it comes to healthcare for the working classes. No wonder young people are going away. Is that what they're considering, though? But anyway, listen. My partner wants me... I'll read it now. My partner wants me to pack up and go to Australia. I'm 33 and we have 3 kids. The wages here are just enough to survive and it's getting tougher by the week. It's almost impossible for the younger generation to get their own home in this country. Just fear taking kids away from family and taking the gamble of leaving. Has anyone else been in a similar position? That's a very good question for you. The partner, mad to move to Australia... they're only in their early 30s and the 3 children with them, but they're wobbling on the connections to the family, etc. And you heard there, their wages are just enough to survive. No hope of home ownership. What should they do in that situation?